Welcome to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by Scientific Triathlon and hosted by me, Michael Eriksson. This is episode 7 of our beginner series, and if you're just finding this series or even this podcast for the first time, then be sure to check out the earlier episodes of the series as well. I won't list them all here, but you can find the list of them in the description of this episode in your podcast app. What we'll discuss today is, as you've seen in the title, running. So we'll get into run training principles, how to build fitness while staying injury-free, basic running form, gear and equipment, strength training and stretching, and some other bits and pieces as well. But before we get into that, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Fuel Hydration. They make carbohydrate products like gels, drink mix, and chews, plus electrolyte products. Carbs are your main race fuel, but your body has a limited amount of carbs stored. And gels and drink mixes are tools that we can use to quickly top up those stores during longer and harder efforts. Electrolytes, on the other hand, replace the salt that you lose in your sweat, and this can help you avoid cramps and keep your muscles firing properly. And electrolytes also help prevent hyponatremia, which can happen if you drink too much plain water and can become quite severe in more extreme cases. The PH 1000 electrolytes will be at the aid stations on course at the Ironman Saint Andrew 3 World Championships in Marbella, as Precision Fuel Hydration are the title sponsor of this year's race. And as a TTS listener, you can get 15% off your first order of 2025 with the code TTS2025 on precisionfuelhydration.com. Okay, so let's get into the main content for today. And as usual, we'll start with a bit of an introduction and set some context for running in triathlon. Running, as you know, is of course the final leg of a triathlon, and it is often the leg that decides how your race unfolds, whether you're fighting for the win of the race or you just want to finish and feel good, feel okay. There's a saying that goes bike for show and run for dough. And that is usually used more for people that want to, let's say, fight for the win, fight for the podium, whether it's overall or in their age group. But it does apply to some extent also for beginners that just want to finish their first race. Because if you, let's say, bike way too hard and you have to walk the run, then you might still finish the race and achieve your goal in that sense, but you will probably not feel that great while doing it, and maybe not even after the fact, because that's not how you expected your race and your run to play out. We have to remember that running in triathlon comes after you've already been swimming and biking. Quite often it's a bit later in the day because you have started with the swim and the bike, so it can be a bit hotter. So really, to run well in a triathlon, it's about pacing the swim and the bike and the run. It's about being prepared for what will happen on race day. And that can be almost as important as just your pure run fitness. Obviously, run fitness still matters a lot, but there's more to running in a triathlon than just having a really fast standalone running time. As a triathlete, one thing that you have a unique advantage of compared to pure runners is that the swimming and the biking provide really good aerobic conditioning without the impact stress that you have from running. So you can actually reach a good level of running fitness on relatively low run volume compared to what a pure runner would have to do to reach the same level of running fitness. And for beginners especially, this is great news because it really helps reduce injury risk while still allowing you to have some solid progress, because you just don't have to do so much running and you can still improve really well. That's the introduction done. So let's get into my first main headline here, which is rule number one of running for beginners: don't get injured. Running comes with the highest injury risk of the three triathlon disciplines. And for beginners, the way that that risk mostly comes from doing too much too soon is in terms of volume, or from just running too hard, maybe running too hard too often. What happens when you're starting to train as a beginner is that your cardiovascular and metabolic systems will adapt quickly. Within weeks, you will get some decent improvements there. But your bones, your tendons and joints, they need perhaps months to get a similar level of adaptation. So this means that your body might feel ready to handle more mileage or more speed before you have the structural integrity to do it. The engine improves quicker than the chassis, so to say. So to stay healthy, what you need to do is to focus on really gradual progression. There is a famous rule, which is a 10% rule, which I think is not at all good, because it means that when you start out, you can barely increase volume at all. And when you get to a later point, when you're doing a lot of running, it basically allows you to do a massive amount of progression that is just way too much. So I like to think of it not in relative terms, but in absolute terms. And for me, a good rule of thumb is that you should progress your running volume with no more than 5 minutes per run per week. Obviously, it can be less than this. You can have some weeks where you stay at the previous level, or you even cut back a little bit if you feel tired or sore. So this means that, for example, if you do 3 runs per week, one of them is 45 minutes and two of them are 30 minutes. The next week, you could do 2 runs that are 35 minutes and 1 run that is 50 minutes, as an example. But basically, as a runner, to stay healthy, stay injury-free, you want to prioritize frequency and consistency, and you want to avoid big jumps in volume or big jumps in intensity. So as a triathlete, 2 or 3 easy runs each week, if you can do that with consistency, that will take you a long way. Recovery, as we have talked about in previous episode in this series, is also an important part of training. So getting enough sleep and eating well. In terms of nutrition, carbohydrate intake, carbohydrate availability is quite important. There's an important role to play for bone health and bone remodeling. So you're much more likely to have bone stress injuries if you have low carbohydrate availability. So pay attention to that. Pay attention to how your body feels. If you start to feel aches and pains, then it's better to back off, let it settle. You can always do a bike instead or a swim instead and cross train in that way. It's not even cross training, it's still triathlon, of course. This is a lot better than to miss, than it's a lot better to do this, to miss 1 run, miss 2 runs, and then get back to it and you have let things settle, your niggle is gone, rather than to force things, get through with your next run and the one after that, and then you suddenly might have a real problem and you might miss 1 full month of running. So listen to your body, adapt your training if you feel you've got a niggle that is even slightly concerning, and have a low threshold for making these adaptations. And then the final point for not getting injured is to choose running shoes that feel comfortable, that fit well, and I would say that have somewhat decent cushioning. You don't want to go with minimalist shoes. If possible, it can be useful to have 2 pairs of shoes actually and rotate, but that's also a bit overkill for beginners. It's maybe something to think about in your second season of triathlon. What you should do though is you should track your mileage on your shoes, and you should replace them roughly every 500 kilometers or 300 miles or so, because they will lose some of their shock absorption properties, and then your injury risk will go up. But anyway, regarding shoes, it's not so much that good shoes keep you healthy, because no matter how good shoes you have, you will get injured if you make some of these other mistakes we have talked about already, like progressing too quickly. But good shoes mitigate the risk. It's basically about avoiding the risk of using bad quality running shoes that are not fit for purpose for serious training, some kind of gym shoes or general purpose fitness shoes, for example. So in this relative sense, good shoes can keep you healthy enough to train consistently, which is what makes you faster in the end. But don't expect shoes to be a magic bullet when it comes to injury prevention. That just is not the case. The next topic to cover here is running form, a running technique. When you start running, some people really, really overthink running form. And I think that running form should not at all be your main focus. What you should focus on is just on simply running relaxed and letting your form develop naturally as you gain endurance, you gain speed, you gain strength and coordination. Because your form will change as you improve in these factors. When you have no endurance, the form that you're running with after 10 minutes and you're already tired and you're already breathing very hard, that's going to be different than the form that you can sustain when you have good endurance and you're running like nothing has happened after 10 minutes. So you need to kind of let the form come to you a little bit and not go searching for the perfect form, which is a bit of a, it doesn't really exist anyway, the perfect form. But that said, there is one form issue that I do want to flag that is quite prevalent and that I think is important to avoid, which is overstriding. This is when your foot lands too far in front of your body and it acts like a brake. So that's not good for your speed or, and your performance, but it also increases the impact forces and therefore the injury risk, especially through the knee joint. So if there's one thing that I really think it does make sense to analyze a bit in your own form, it is whether you're overstriding or not. And if you are, try to correct that. Beyond that, without wanting to overthink or making you overthink things, you definitely shouldn't obsess about these things. But I have a list of cues that I think can be quite useful. Something to maybe do some body scans every once in a while when you're running and check whether you can apply any of these cues and whether that helps you, whether you feel better when you're applying them versus not. So the first one is to run tall and look slightly ahead rather than looking down. The second one is to keep your arms compact and focus on the arm swing more backwards rather than forward. The third one is to avoid collapsing or sitting into your stride, sinking into the ground when landing. This is something that we commonly see, especially people with desk jobs. It's quite easy to actually end up in that kind of seated position when running. What you want to do is to try to keep stiffness through the leg to bounce back up quickly and basically not collapse into the ground. The fourth one is to maintain a neutral pelvis position. So basically the cue here is to not bend at the waist, neither forwards nor backwards. So a neutral pelvis position. And the final one is to stay relaxed. Tension is a waste of energy and often tension leads to poor form in various ways. So stay relaxed, and the way to stay relaxed is definitely not to overthink how you're running. So those are the main cues that I would, again, you can try them on for size a little bit when you're running, but don't obsess over them. There are lots of information as well that you will see about cadence, foot strike, etc. Cadence is super individual based on height. So somebody who's very tall will have a much lower cadence than somebody who's very short. And it's not just your absolute height, but your leg length and your leg length relative to your overall height. So cadence is more variable than I think people give it credit for. Foot strike, most runners do to some extent. Heel strike, it's not something that I would focus on. As long as you're not overstriding, I wouldn't focus on foot strike. But it's not a problem if you don't heel strike, of course. If you have a midfoot or even a forefoot strike, it can be fine, totally fine. But just be aware that most runners heel strike and it's not a problem for them. What you should be aware of is that running economy, which is how efficiently you are running quantitatively, how much energy are you spending to run a certain speed, that improves mainly through actual consistent running over time and not really through too much tinkering with form. Again, as I said, let the form come to you. Don't go looking for it too much, but a little bit you can. So we're trying to find a balance there in the middle somewhere, although more towards the side of not doing too much active tinkering. Topic number three that we're getting into now is how to build run fitness, which I think is usually the topic that everybody's the most interested in. In episode 4 of the beginner series, we talked about the three main levers of endurance training, and that they are frequency, duration, and intensity. And these are, of course, also the main levers in run training. And for beginners, the one that really matters the most in running is frequency, because focusing on duration or intensity can really it can really put your consistency at risk. So that is why frequency is the most important one. It's the most important lever, the safest lever that you can pull as a beginner. That being said, as we talked about in episode 4, I believe as well, was that the typical beginner triathlete weekly structure would be 2 runs, 2 bikes, and 2 swims. And that, I think, is the perfect starting point for a beginner. So starting with 2 runs per week, it might not sound like much, it might not sound like a lot of frequency, but when you combine it with the swimming and cycling and some crossover effect from the aerobic training you get from those two disciplines, it's actually plenty to build your running fitness and to do it in a safe way. Once you're comfortable, you can move to 3 runs per week if your schedule allows. But to start with, two is perfectly fine. It's more than enough, or it's enough. One is a little bit not quite enough, but two is the perfect number. You should keep most running at an easy effort, and especially if you're just getting into it, but we'll talk about that. Running at an easy effort means, in theory at least, it means being able to talk, have a conversation, or basically kind of trying to being able to talk. Running is harder cardiovascularly than swimming and cycling, so it's a bit more difficult, and especially if you come from a bit of a lower level of fitness, maybe you're coming from not much of an active lifestyle, and that's okay. Don't worry if it feels hard, it will get better. I think for anybody though, and for anybody who's new to running, if you're coming into triathlon, whether you're coming from a cycling background or from nothing at all, the first 4 weeks of triathlon training or run training related to triathlon, you don't have to do any intensity. So just easy running or run walk if you need to. And here, easy running, don't worry about the speed, just adapt to the impact and try to go at an effort that feels comfortable enough. And after that, after 4 weeks, if that has gone well, you can start to include a bit of intensity once per week. And what I recommend here is something that I'm using the term slightly incorrectly, but it's also kind of how it's used today, fartlek runs. Which basically, in this context, I mean short intervals, but they are based on feel and vibes rather than trying to run a certain pace. So one example that you could do, this is actually the first intense run in my first beginner triathlon sprint distance program, is 5 times 1 minute of moderately hard running, followed by 2 minutes of easy jogging. So that's the first intense session that you're doing in that plan, and that comes in week 5 after 4 weeks of only easy running. So over time, then you can extend the duration of these intervals or increase the number of intervals or a combination of both. But basically here, trying to do short repetitions, mainly moderately hard or even hard, but being able to sustain the effort throughout one interval, but throughout the session as well. So from interval 1 to the last interval of the session. So pacing there is really critical. In terms of duration, building one of your weekly runs gradually until it becomes a bit of a long run is also something that I would recommend. So again, using the example of my 8-week beginner sprint distance program, the longest run of the week starts at 35 minutes and then it builds to 45 minutes. And it holds steady there in the second half of the last 4 weeks of the plan, because 45 minutes for the long run is more than enough to prepare you for your first sprint distance triathlon, and you minimize the risk of overdoing it. If you're training for a second or third race, you can definitely build beyond this, and I would recommend doing it. But also at the same time, remember that you consistency is always the main thing. So don't rush into building too long a long run. I think that your first year of running, basically, you don't need to go beyond 60 minutes. Unless you're doing something like a race, like a 10K or an Olympic distance, and you might run, that might be longer than 60 minutes, and that's fine. But in terms of training, and if you're training for distances up to 10 kilometers or an Olympic distance triathlon, your first year of running, you will minimize injury risk and the risk of not being consistent by basically capping the long run at 60 minutes. So we've kind of touched on all of the different runs that you will be doing as a beginner triathlete or beginner runner even already in that previous discussion. But just to summarize, these are the simple running sessions that basically cover everything that a beginner triathlete needs. The first would be an endurance run, 20 to 45 minutes usually at a conversational effort, so an RPE of 3 to 4 out of 10, RPE meaning rating of perceived exertion, so it's a subjective scale for how hard you're working, 3 to 4 out of 10, so pretty easy, and this type of run should make up most of your running. Then for complete beginners, or let's say those starting from a lower level of fitness, maybe coming off the couch, or those that might be more prone to injury, an alternative to endurance runs would be run walk. So here you could alternate 1 to 5 minutes of easy running with 30 to 60 seconds of walking. So for example, if you're starting, coming off the couch, you could start with 1 minute of running, 1 minute of walking, but then you would build up all the way to 5 minutes of running, 30 seconds of walking gradually. Then the third example workout is the long run, once per week typically, and this could be 40 to 60 minutes at an easy effort. As we discussed, you would build up to get to this duration, and you wouldn't need to go beyond 60 minutes in your first year, but then once you get to that point, you can also, of course, start building beyond that. And then finally, the final session is the fartlek run. So again, you would first want to become consistent with your running, with your frequency of running, and making sure that you're not getting injured. But once you are at that point, a fartlek run, so 1 to 3 minute intervals perhaps, with 1 to 3 minute easy jogging between efforts. So just to give you one example, 5 times 2 minutes, moderately hard to hard, with 3 minutes of easy jogging between these intervals. And here, the point with a fartlek is really that it's feel-based. So you want to focus here on an effort that feels strong, but controlled, and that you can sustain through all 5 intervals in this example with 5 by 2 minutes. So these sessions, that's basically a great toolkit, a great arsenal of workouts, workout types for you to use. You'll get the endurance you need. You can build up your tissue resiliency. And also you'll start building that the top end of your engine with the fartlek run, so which is also important. And one thing that you could potentially add is some strides to some of your endurance runs. Strides are basically short accelerations to a pretty high speed, close-ish to your max speed, but not quite max speed. And this is to work on biomechanics, work on pure speed, and it can be quite useful. So you could do 4 times 10-second strides with 1 minute super easy jogging between at the end of an endurance run, for example. But yeah, you don't need a lot of complex structure when you're starting out, just a few simple sessions, and be frequent with that, be consistent with that. And as you've heard me describe these sessions, I've used RPE a lot, and I think that's something that's important to keep in mind and to notice here, that learning how to use RPE right away, that's going to be really helpful for you later on. And this goes not just in running, of course, but in cycling and in swimming as well. But when you're starting out, that's one of the best ways, because you might not even have a GPS watch or a heart rate monitor. You can still start running. You don't need all of that tech to start running, but you need to learn to listen to your body and learn to feel how hard your effort is. Now, let's discuss a couple of things that I know a lot of beginners have questions about, and that's strength training and stretching. So if we start with strength training, it's a really good thing in many ways. It makes you more resilient to injury. It works the muscles, it strengthens the muscles, it strengthens the tendons and the connective tissue and stabilizes the joints. It makes you more athletic in general. It can improve your range of motion and your strength at different points of your range of motion. And for middle-aged and older athletes, I think it's not so much for triathlon per se, but just for general long-term health and quality of life, strength training is something that is really important and you should probably consider as an important thing to do. That being said, especially if you're really coming into triathlon from the perspective of, I just want to finish my next race, or I want to become the best possible triathlete that I can, but you're quite limited of time and you struggle to fit in your swim, biking, and running already, then my advice is that you don't have to add strength training right away to your program. It's always possible to incorporate it later once you have your core swim, bike, and run training habits established. So, and if you do include strength training, I think a lot of beginners get overwhelmed basically because you're trying to fit in suddenly swimming, biking, running, and strength training. It's essentially 4 different things. And you can't just do one of them per week because it's not quite enough to move the needle. So basically, if you are going to do strength training in addition to the swim, bike, and run, first of all, make sure that you can handle the 2 swims, 2 bikes, and 2 runs that we discussed as the staple program for a beginner. And if you can do that, then do 2 short sessions per week, focusing mainly on the lower body and on your core, because those are going to be the most beneficial for you as a triathlete. You can add a bit of upper body in there for sure, but it shouldn't be a main focus. So exercises that you could include here would be squats, lunges, calf raises, bridges, planks, and deadlifts. So exercises that target the calves, hamstrings, quads, glutes, and your core. And you could mix bilateral. I recommend mixing bilateral and single leg exercises to become more well-rounded as an athlete, basically, and cover all the boxes, tick all the boxes with the bilateral strength work is a bit better at developing your max strength, whereas the single leg work is more specific to the sports that you're doing. So strength training is how I would approach it like this in summary. You don't have to do it. Don't do it if it's overwhelming to add it on top of the swim, biking, and running right now. You can add it a bit later once you have more control of your routine. If you do add it, start with two very short sessions per week. It can be 20 minutes. That's perfect. You don't need to do more than that. So obviously, you don't need to do all of those exercises that I mentioned in one single session, but you can rotate through them. Now, stretching, on the other hand, has very little value for most people. There are certain cases, if you're working on a specific issue, specific injury or mobility limitation under the guidance of a professional, like a physical therapist, there are definitely cases where stretching is useful. But just doing stretching because that's not the right way to approach stretching. We know from research that there are no benefits, basically, of doing stretching for running performance or for injury prevention. And if you do stretching before running, static stretching before running, it can actually reduce your running performance and your running economy. If you're going to do anything before running, it should be a dynamic warm-up. So this could be things like leg swings or hip circles or lunge walks, all those sorts of things. That's totally fine. If you feel that that helps you run better, then I think that that's that can be a good thing to do, but it really needs to be dynamic. Absolutely don't do static stretching before warm-up, because best case scenario, it's a waste of time, but worst case scenario, it actually makes you run worse. Like I said, there's no evidence that static stretching helps with running performance or injury prevention, but if you think that it feels good to do and you want to do it, you feel better doing it, then you can do it, but then you should do it after training, so after your running especially, but also after cycling potentially or swimming if you feel like it. Have low expectations for what it does for you, but if it feels good, then that's always helpful. If you're actually trying to work through some issue, then do that with the help of a professional, a physical therapist, because they can guide you on the correct duration to hold the stretches and how often you need to do it. Basically, what a lot of people get wrong with static stretching, if you're trying to actually make the muscle longer, which is what static stretching does or what you're trying to do, then to do that, you need to hold it for a certain amount of time. And it depends a bit on where you're looking. 30 seconds is the absolute minimum, but I've also seen 1 minute as a kind of minimum guidance. So you actually have to hold the stretch for a long time to get the benefit. And you need to do it very regularly, daily, almost to see the benefit. So I think that sometimes the way people do static stretching is just isn't doing anything. But then again, if it makes you feel good, then that is also doing something. So that's worth considering. But my summary on static stretch or stretching in general is that it's not something that I generally prescribe, but if it makes you feel good, by all means, you can do it. Make it dynamic if you're doing it before your run. Static is okay if you do it after running. Now let's discuss some common mistakes. We're getting towards the end of the episode. There are a couple of points still to do. It's, of course, always better to learn from others' mistakes rather than learning from your own mistakes. So I'm going to list the mistakes that I've seen most commonly in beginner triathletes and runners. And I think I've also personally made all of these mistakes except one. And I'll leave it to you to guess which one. If you listen to this podcast for a long while, I'm pretty sure that you can figure out which is the one that I haven't made. But anyway, the most common mistakes to look out for here in terms of running for beginner triathletes are running too fast on easy days, increasing mileage too quickly, which can be both in terms of a single run mileage or duration or a total weekly volume. So both of these are important to make the progression very gradual and slow. The third mistake, these are not in any particular order, but just to keep count, is running on back-to-back days before your body is ready. Always try to spread out your runs throughout the week with a day of not running in between. The fourth mistake is ignoring warning signs of overuse injuries or training through pain. So basically, when you feel the first signs of a niggle, stop running and maybe take the next run off if you still feel some issues. Nip things in the bud early, and that will help you so much, and you will run so much more in the long term by sometimes taking a step back in the short term. The fifth mistake is running in worn out shoes or shoes inappropriate for serious running. So maybe something like, you know, general, I don't know, gym shoes or tennis shoes or what have you, but not proper running shoes, or worn out shoes. So basically shoes that you have had for 3 years and maybe used a lot for walking and running, and they just have too many kilometers on them. And the last one, the sixth mistake here, is over-focusing on technique and running form. So a theme with most of these mistakes is the tendency to overdo things. And when you're new to triathlon, basically a cue that you could take is that the training should generally leave you feeling energized more than it leaves you feeling exhausted. Because you're getting, when you're new, you have such a low threshold for getting a good stimulus. So, and you don't need to exceed that threshold by much. So actually most of the time, feeling energized at the end of training is a good sign. But if you feel exhausted after most of your training, then you might be overdoing things. So keep that in mind as well, and try to stay in tune with how you feel in that regard as well. So the next and final topic here is running shoes and gear. And the most important piece of equipment as a runner is, of course, your shoes. When it comes to selecting running shoes, comfort and good fit is basically everything. You don't need to think about too much else than that. A good running shoe should feel natural on your foot. It should feel supportive. And for most beginners, I think a shoe that has some decent cushioning is best. It doesn't mean that you have to get a maximalist shoe, but I don't think minimalist shoes are the way to go in most cases. As we talked about in episode 3, which was on gear and equipment, so that is beginner series 3, I recommend trying out shoes in a specialist running store. That kind of store will have plenty of good models and brands to choose from, and you can usually get some decent help and advice from the people working there. They will generally have a treadmill that you can run on. So yeah, that's a good thing to do if you have that possibility. I think that for beginners, you should avoid super shoes or so-called super shoes. So the shoes that have carbon plates for the time being. They're designed for running as fast as possible, but they lack some other things. They often lack some stability, and they have other potential injury risks associated with them. I've covered that in some podcast episodes in the past, and there's research to back that up. So they're not the safest choice for beginners, in my opinion. I would save them for when you've built up a bit of a stronger running foundation. It doesn't mean that you have to run for 5 years before getting them, but at least wait 1 year. And then you will have a better base to use them from. And other than shoes, you don't need a lot to run. You need very little. You need some decent running socks that makes running more comfortable. So it's worth getting that. Any technical shorts and t-shirt will get the job done clothing wise. There's a lot of really expensive clothes these days. You really don't need that, in my opinion. In winter, you will have to layer up, of course. So yeah, that's something to get used to as well. Basically, when you're running, you build up a lot of heat. So you actually generally need to feel a bit cold when you start a run if you're dressed appropriately, because otherwise you're probably overdressed if you feel warm and cozy when you start a run in winter. This is in colder climates. That is where I live in Portugal. It's pretty much perfect throughout the year. So I'm lucky in that regard. Optional extras when you're starting out as a runner include a GPS watch. We talked about this again in Beginner Series 3. You do not need a GPS watch when you're starting. But if you have one, or if you're just really motivated and want to get one, by all means, go for it. That's a great piece of kit. And it's something that if you're a beginner, you've done your first couple of triathlons and you get quite bitten by the sport and committed and want to get a bit more serious about it, or you want to basically do more of it, a GPS watch is one of the first pieces of kit that you're, or piece of equipment that you're going to be want to purchase later on, as you have decided that, okay, this is a sport that I want to commit a bit more to. Another thing that I think is can be really useful is a running belt. So basically that's a pretty tight fitting band that you wear around your waist or your hips, and where you can fit your, basically it has pockets in it, or the whole band is a pocket, so you can fit your phone, your keys, etc. in there, even a soft flask, which also, by the way, is a great piece of equipment for running, even if you're not doing very long runs as a beginner. But if you're going upwards of 45 up to 60 minutes and it's a warm summer day, then definitely having a soft flask with some hydration can be really nice to have. So these are some additional pieces of equipment that can be good to consider. But again, other than your shorts, t-shirt, socks, and potentially winter clothing, and your running shoes, of course, there's nothing that you absolutely need when you're starting out in triathlon from a running perspective. So let's wrap this up with a bit of a summary and some key takeaways. So to become a better runner as a triathlete, remember to focus on what really matters, which is consistency, gradual progress, and staying healthy. Rule number one, stay healthy, don't get injured. You can let your fitness and technique evolve naturally through regular, mostly easy running. And don't get distracted by complexity, whether it's in regard to training programs or workouts, or whether it's gadgets, etc. Don't let that distract you. Keep things simple, as we discussed, and that's going to set you up for better progress in the long term. When you get more advanced, there's definitely a time and a place for doing more advanced tactics, for sure. But stay patient and keep things simple, and that's going to set you up for long-term success. As some practical homework from this episode, if you want to have that, if you don't already have a training plan that you follow, then I would recommend that you sit down and map out your running for the next 8 weeks with the principles that we discussed in this episode. So make sure that you have the frequency that we discussed, so 2 runs a week or maybe 3 runs a week, if you're already at that point where you're running 3 runs a week in addition to swimming and biking is possible. Make sure that the majority of that running is easy, and make sure that any progress that you have in terms of duration or intensity is appropriate and gradual, and that you don't, and when you actually execute the training, that you don't exceed this planning, this smart and gradual progression over the next 8 weeks. Because this is what is load management, really. I mean, or at least one of the main things of load management. And load management is really the number one thing that will help you stay healthy. It's not the perfect shoes. It's not the stretching or strength training routine you do. It's basically planning the training and executing the training properly relative to where your body is now and what it is capable of handling right now. All right, I think that's it. I don't have anything more to say on this topic, so I hope that you enjoyed this and found it useful. You can, as always, find the detailed show notes for the episode on scientifictriathlon.com/beginner7. And if you have any questions about this episode or future beginner series episodes or comments, feedback, please send them to me on michael@scientifictriathlon.com. That's Michael with a K, or you can DM me on Instagram at Scientific Triathlon HQ. Also, a bit of housekeeping. I now have on Spotify polls for every episode, so that you can rate the episode. You can tell me what you think about it. You can tell me that you loved it, you really liked it, you liked it, it was okay, or you didn't like it. So that helps me basically know whether an episode was good, or, and if it wasn't good, then I can have a think about why that was the case and try to make things better the next time. So if you're a Spotify user, then I would really encourage you and appreciate if you could take that as a habit to go and rate each episode on Spotify. In the next episode of the beginner series, we'll be talking about open water swimming, but we'll probably weave in a non-beginner series episode between this one and that next beginner series episode. So there will be something else out on this feed before that. Now, before we wrap up, let me take a quick moment to plug our coaching that we do at Scientific Triathlon, because now is a great time to start working with a coach. We're in October and we have a long winter ahead of us in the Northern Hemisphere. And this is a perfect time to start working with a coach, because you have a long time to really build the foundations of your aerobic fitness, your metabolic and cardiovascular fitness, your technical foundations, and even things like getting set up with the right equipment that you need for the racing season ahead. This is the time to start working if you really want to have your best summer of racing next year or next spring or fall, whatever it might be. Having a long runway is so much better than having a short runway. You can do so much more. Basically, the more time you have, the better you can do. It's like investing or anything. It's like starting a business. The more time you have, the better you can do. And working with a coach is like that. This is the perfect time to work. Our coaches are also now very much in that mode of taking on new athletes and focusing on onboarding new athletes. So the timing couldn't be better. If you have been thinking about getting a coach, check out the information that we have on scientifictriathlon.com/coaching. You can also email me directly and ask if you have more questions. And before starting with a coach, you always will have the opportunity to have a call with them and see if it's a good fit for you or not. So there's no commitment without actually knowing what you're getting into. And there's also no long-term commitment. You just pay on a month-by-month basis. And if after the first month you realize that it's not a good fit, then you can just stop and that's fine. It wasn't for you. Of course, that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. So we don't have a long-term commitment. So if you're curious about coaching or you know that you want a coach, I think Scientific Triathlon Coaching is one of the best, if not the best option out there. So check us out. And yeah, I hope that we can be able to work with you and help you achieve your triathlon goals towards the 2026 racing season. Okay, I think that's enough of that, and that's enough of this episode. We'll just thank our sponsors, Precision Fuel Hydration, that you can find on precisionfuelhydration.com. If you're looking for high-quality, practical, and tasty fueling and hydration products, make sure to try Precision Fuel Hydration, and don't forget to take 15% off your first order with the code TTS2025. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart, and keep loving triathlon.